I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE on the anniversary of the first mass USSR draft into the Red Army to fight fascism and what today inspires the Banderites of Ukraine. One Caribbean nation whose volunteers have fought alongside Russians against NATO-armed Zelensky troops is Cuba, which in recent years has expanded ties here with the UAE. And today, on the birthday of the captain of Cuba's working class, the late trade unionist Lazaro Peña González, we turn to Cuba. That's Cuba, beacon without which all global South movements would be dimmed today. The revolution led by Fidel Castro and Che Guevara overthrew the U.S.-backed Batista dictatorship in 1959. But today, it continues to inspire hundreds of millions around the world seeking to end imperial United States pretensions and actions. Since 1959, the U.S. has pursued relentless efforts to put out the light that Cuba shines in a dark world. The revolution itself led to among the highest literacy rates in the world. Life expectancy scores have recently been at an all-time high, 8 years higher than in areas of Washington, D.C. Cuban under-five child mortality scores are better than the United States. It is arguably Cuba's example of helping the poor all around the world that is the reason the U.S. has sought to destroy Cuba. Nelson Mandela, upon his release, asked, "What other country can point to a record of greater selflessness than Cuba?" Today, Donald Trump seeks to annihilate Cuba after his attempt to destroy the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela, kidnapping its leader. Joining me now from New York City is Cuba's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Ernesto Zubiran Guzman. Ambassador, thank you so much for coming on Going Underground. Marco Rubio, I want to get on to what Cuba's like at the moment, but I mean, Marco Rubio, Trump's Secretary of State, his family, of course, left Cuba under the U.S. dictator Batista. He was given gifts as a child by a drug kingpin, Orlando Cecilia. He, according to Trump, is talking to Cuba right now. What did you make of it when Donald Trump said Rubio is talking to Cuba right now? Was he talking to you?
Well, you know, I read also the report on some news, and they already said that they have not confirmation about what they are saying. So for me, it sounds like, you know, like a speculation. The position of Cuba on the issue of the dialogue between the U.S. and Cuba is crystal clear. It was made by the Minister of Foreign Affairs and also by some high-rank official of Cuba. So it's very clear. What I can say you is that it is possible, if you take a look of the history of the relation between Cuba and the U.S., it is possible to have a dialogue between Cuba and the U.S. beneficial for both parts, you know? Because most of the time people talk about dialogue between Cuba and the U.S., and they just mention that it is beneficial for Cuba. No, it is beneficial for both parts, you know? If you, for example, just take the migration issues, Cuba is well known because we promote a safe, regular, and orderly flow of migration. Even when we don't agree with the method and the strategy on of the U.S. government on migration, it looks like migration, it could be one of the areas that we can collaborate on beneficial, on mutual beneficial.
But then why did, Ambassador, to interrupt, but why did Trump say that? Do you think that Marco Rubio is saying to Trump, oh yeah, I'm discussing things with the Cuban government, and not doing what he's saying, in fact, lying to Donald Trump?
As I told you, as it's speculation. You know, I only have clear the position of Cuba, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Cuba, and the position of the high-ranking leader of Cuba, which is a public position, and it is not a new one position. It is a position for a long, long time in terms of the requirement to have a dialogue with the U.S.
But now, of course, we know via Axios, sources to Axios saying they're looking for the next Delcy in Cuba. What did you make of that? And Delcy, of course, referring to Delcy Rodriguez, whose father was tortured to death by the CIA and used to work for Maduro, who is now where you're speaking to me from, in a jail cell in New York. What did you make of this? They're looking for the next Delcy in Cuba.
Again, speculation. The fact, when they attacked Venezuela, they violate the international law, they violate the charter of the UN, and they violate the rule of the foreign trade all over around the world. So that's on the fact. The rest are the speculation of Axios and the rest of the media that speculate about this issue, you know. And I am not here to contribute to the speculation, you know. So we condemn very clearly also the attack on Venezuela, and from the very beginning, and we are still condemning this action, because it is not only against Venezuela, it is not only against Cuba. It's a doctrine that peace through force, you know, and we have a proclaim of Latin America and the Caribbean as zone of peace that was signed by the all member states of the CELAC movement, the Caribbean Latin American states, signing in Cuba on 2014, 12 years ago. And at that time, all the head of state and government of the CELAC movement agreed to keep and to remain the Latin America and the Caribbean zone as a zone of peace. And that was that the U.S. government violated when they attacked Venezuela last January 3rd.
Yeah, and there are trade alliances with the United Arab Emirates. Diaz Canal was here in the United Arab Emirates. Certainly all around this region, the kidnapping of Maduro raised eyebrows, at least. But of course, it's all speculation, people are talking about the fact Rubio is talking with Alejandro Castro Espín, member of the Castro family, high-level dialogue. I mean, you don't want to discuss this particular report, of course, but it's conceivable that the United States, after bombing your country, trying to invade your country, trying to assassinate your leaders, after dropping chemical weapons on the crops of your country, conceivable that they are trying to talk to people to replace President Diaz-Canel, isn't it?
This is a question that you have to make to the American authority, not to me. As I told you, the position of Cuba on the issue of the dialogue is crystal clear. We had a dialogue in the past. It was a beneficial dialogue for both parts. And those are the facts that I can...
Yeah, but do you understand that's the context of any talks, official talks, with the through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs? That is the context of this relationship of what the United States wants from Cuba.
Well, I cannot speak about from the U.S. government. I can speak about the interest of the Cuban government. And what's interesting is to have a relation with the U.S., even when we know that we have different point of view on many issues, you know. But as I told you, we demonstrated in the past that it is possible to have a different relation between Cuba and the U.S., even when we know that we don't agree in many issues. I mentioned the migration issues. I can also mention the drug trafficking. We have a policy of zero tolerance.
Yeah, no, I understand that, Ambassador, but you know what Trump has said. He's not interested in that, arguably. Just tell me what your reaction was when you heard that the United States had kidnapped Maduro and Celia Flores, and how many Cubans were killed in the Donald Trump operation?
Well, the reaction was an immediate reaction. You know, we condemn in the strength terms the attack on Venezuela, the kidnap of President Maduro and the Comrade Celia Flores. And as part of this military operation, 32 Cubans that were there as part of the protection of the President Maduro were killed, you know. And that's give you an idea the courage of the Cuban people. But also, I called your attention the ceremony that we organized in Cuba when those comrades were repatriated. The rest were repatriated to Cuba, and the feel of the Cuban people to welcome those new 32 heroes. You know that they were able to offer their life, not only because Venezuela, not only because of Cuba, but also because the freedom of Latin America and the Caribbean.
Around the world, people know about Cuban doctors helping save lives all across the global south. Perhaps people didn't realize you also have security people around the world. Why were there Cuban security teams that were commissioned to protect Nicolás Maduro?
Well, because we have different kind of cooperation with different kind of countries. So including, as you said, in the health sector, in the education sector, scientific research, and other fields like this one that you know. It was an agreement between both parts, like every independent country do all over around the world. They establish different kind of cooperation with different kind of counterparts. But the most important issue is that is something between this government and the other government. You know, the point here is it's a beneficial cooperation between Cuba and Venezuela in this sense. We are not looking to harm no one else. You know, this is a cooperation, and Cuba, as the rest of the country, that we never force the cooperation agreement. So if we have some interest, we talk with some counterpart. If they agree, we sign an agreement, we establish a cooperation, you know. But this is the way that the world
What are relations
works.
Now? What are relations now with Venezuela? What did you think? Delcy Rodriguez was pictured meeting John Ratcliffe, the head of the CIA. Before that, Chris Wright, or after that was Chris Wright, the energy secretary, this month met with Delcy Rodriguez. What are relations now between the Venezuelan and Cuban governments?
First of all, people have to understand that the relation between Cuba and Venezuela are historical relations. You know.
Yeah, but right now, are there Cubans protecting Delcy Rodriguez?
If you don't know the past, you cannot understand the present. So the national hero of Cuba, José Martí, in the 19th century, was traveling to Venezuela and support Venezuela. The first travel abroad that Fidel Castro make after the triumph of the revolution was to Venezuela. So my point is that the relations between Cuba and Venezuela don't start with the Bolivarian Revolution. Of course, during the Bolivarian Revolution, we strengthened the cooperation between Cuba and Venezuela. And now, as far as I understand, we keep this relation that we are, and the future, as our president mentioned on a press conference, a public press conference, the relation between countries, you build up from the present to the future. So now we are working, I'm sure, with Venezuela on our bilateral relation, but without any external interference, as we don't allow third countries to interfere in our internal issues, we don't interfere in the internal issues of third countries.
Ambassador, I'll stop you there. More from Cuba's ambassador to the UN after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Cuba's ambassador to the United Nations, Ernesto Soberón Guzmán. Ambassador, we were talking about Venezuela. We might return to that. Let's talk about Cuba itself. I lived there during the special period, the worst period, when the collapse of the USSR affected the economy. Tell me about it now. Are things as bad as 1992? Some people say it's like Gaza without bombs, 90 miles from Florida. What effect has the Trump increased blockade of Cuba having it? I understand that for the first time since the revolution, the return of hunger or the special period.
Well, you know, the situation right now in Cuba is a very complicated situation, you know. And sometimes it's not usual to compare because every period has a difference. Just to give you an example, during the special period, we didn't have the development on biopharmaceutical industry that we have now, just for example. Or during the special period, we didn't have the developed on the tourism sector that we have now. So there are different situations. This is the first point. The second one is that even when this is not the first time that we face a situation like this, words like collapse, give up, betrayed are not in our dictionary, you know? Words like resistance, resilience, innovation, find solutions for our problems are in our dictionary. So right now we are finding solutions for the problems that we are facing. Can you imagine that with this measure approved by the President Trump on January 29, that they are trying to impose tariff to someone, any country that sell on to Cuba, which, by the way, violate the international law, the charter of the UN, the rules.
I don't think anyone cares about the charter of the UN anymore, with respect, Ambassador.
But these are very important because those are the main issues here, you know. Well, it's not only Cuba.
Yeah, but isn't that the point? They're kidnapping leaders. The Americans are kidnapping leaders in your region. You're talking about international law. Should the Cuban government not have prepared for a Trump presidency?
No, we are preparing and we are working on that. And I will explain you that. My point is that, first of all, the question is, has the U.S. government the right to do something like this? They don't. You know, this is the first question. And the main issue for the rest of the world, you know, because today is Cuba, but tomorrow could be anywhere. So, but now, for example, we are now producing, and as I told you, the situation is very complicated because it has an impact in all of the areas of the society. It has an impact in the health sector because you need electricity for the hospital. It has an impact in the education sector because you need electricity for the schools. It has an impact in the food production because you need also electricity. It has an impact to preserve the food. It has an impact to transport the food from one point to other. It has an impact to transport population. It has an impact on the research center. So it has an impact in all the areas of the society. Now, we are just with our hands crossed waiting for a solution. No, we are working by ourselves to find a solution. For example, we are producing right now between 12 and 16% of the electricity that we produce right now, we produce from renewable energy sources like solar panels. You know, this is one example that we are working on that, and we were preparing for this situation. We have been working also with a process to refine the oil that we produce that is very heavy. We need to refine before using in the generation power. So we are working on that also. We have been working in terms of create new vaccines, new medicines for the health challenge that we face in the current situation. Right now, we have some children that they have special necessities.
I should just say, I mean, in parts of Washington, D.C., life expectancy is 63. In Cuba, the official figure is 78, the internationally recognized figure. I mean, Cuba so far is not as bad in terms of the life one leads as parts of Washington, D.C.
Of course. And Cuba could be much better if we would not have that kind of measures against Cuba. So even even facing the situation that we are facing right now...
Yeah, but it still seems as if you are preparing now. Like all this solar panel generation, why was this not done before Donald Trump was in the White House? Why is it now? And you talked about international law. I mean, Fidel Castro did not say the Bay of Pigs is illegal. Fidel Castro went around fighting the Americans and the mercenaries at the Bay of Pigs. Why does Cuba today talk about as if the United States has ever respected international law with respect to Cuba? What's the point of that?
But Fidel Castro always has the doctrine that the best way to win a war is to prevent it. And the best way to prevent a war is to be ready for it. So we have been working in both things. First of all, we are working in the international arena.
No, Cuba has been working on tourism. Arguably, Cuba has been working on tourism and reducing the resilience of a against a U.S. invasion, surely. Is Cuba prepared today against those Trump warships that he assembles in the Caribbean every other month?
Cuba is ready for all the scenarios. You know, Cuba is ready for all the scenarios. And Cuba have been working for its development. Cuba have been working for avoid any kind of aggression. And Cuba have been working also to get as much support as possible in the international arena. And if you take a look, it's also public. Every week we have a day to prepare for the defense also in Cuba. So we are not working in just one direction. We are working in different directions. You know, we are working to find solution for problem. We are working to have the support of the international community. We are working on the
well, what is, okay, on that, on the international community. I mean, clear that Guatemala is refusing Cuban doctors, Nicaragua ending visa-free travel. The countries of your hemisphere are frightened. What about more internationally? Did the meeting with Vladimir Putin, Bruno Rodriguez Paria, your boss, the foreign minister of Cuba, was this week, was the other day in Moscow. Russia and China, are they going to help militarily? Are they going to help Cuba? They're not going to help Cuba, are they?
Well, first of all, we reiterate our appreciation and gratitude for the support receiving, not just for Russia, for China, for Vietnam, for Mexico, but also, for example, for the G77 and China, the largest group in the UN, for the non-aligned movements, the second largest group in the UN.
With respect, I know you're the ambassador to the United Nations, but we have seen a genocide in Gaza, as you know well, and Cuba's position has been for telling the world about the genocide. It's clear the United Nations has not prevented a genocide in this century. The importance now is surely military help to help Cuba get the ships, oil tankers, refuel the power stations of Cuba. And they're not doing
that. If you ask me, the important issues now is an international movement to prevent this drugging or peace through force. Because, as I told you, today is Cuba, but tomorrow could be anyone else. So the war, it's that when 134 countries in the UN denounce that these actions are illegal, are against Cuba, they are telling the U.S. government that they have to change.
Yes, but Ambassador, they don't care, do they? They don't care about United Nations votes. Do you think, because that's what haunts the Global South, do you think it was an inside job in Venezuela when they kidnapped Nicolás Maduro? Is it possible there could be an inside job in Cuba too?
Mr. Rodas, this is not a question for me. This is a question that I can talk from the Cuba, about Cuba, but not about the third country. So this is not a question for me.
What would you say outside of the United Nations and the votes and the voting records, what would you say to Beijing and Moscow about what Cuba needs now to save Cuba from the United States? It's clear the United States says it's a failure. It's a failed nation, Donald Trump called you, your nation. And it's clear what they want. They want to destroy socialism in Cuba. So what can Beijing, what can Moscow offer to save Cuba?
Cuba needs, as the rest of the world, to have a foreign trade without coercion, for example. No one has the right to say a third country, you can do this or you cannot do that. You know, this is a decision that every independent country has to take. And so we have foreign trade with different countries, not only with Russia and China, but a lot of some other them. So Cuba needs that no one can create obstacles for the foreign trade of Cuba. No, Cuba needs that the U.S. government don't make a campaign to cancel the health cooperation projects that Cuba has with third countries. You know, that is another issue that Cuba needs, that U.S. lift the embargo like every year the General Assembly denounced in here in New York. And just in three words, Cuba needs let Cuba leave.
And just finally, you saw Claudia Sheinbaum from Mexico trying to support Cuba. You know the threats against Mercosur countries, against countries in your hemisphere. What would you say to those leaders who are being threatened by the Trump administration for refusing to support imperialism?
Well, you know, I said, first of all, I reiterate, in the case of Mexico, our endless gratitude to the Mexican people and the Mexican government. As President Sheinbaum said, they have been sending aid to Cuba, and they are, as she also said, they are talking with the U.S. government in order to allow Mexico to sell oil and fuel to Cuba. So, and there are a lot of countries that they have been doing as much as they can in order to support Cuba, and that is something that we really appreciate. And for the world, as I told you, no one has the right to decide or to take a decision on behalf of on third countries. So this is not the way that the world is supposed to work.
Ambassador, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having this opportunity.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK EU armed bombing of Gaza, Lebanon, Iran, and Venezuela, and the blockade of Cuba. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.